Hey idiots, I'm Jessica Michelle Singleton. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I'm also an idiot sometimes. Aren't we all? If you love to laugh as much as you love to learn about new people, I have a podcast for you called Hey Idiots. It's 50% hilarity, 50% curiosity, and 100% insanity. My guests include experts in their field, sometimes just other stand-up comedian friends, and occasionally absolutely insane people who have somehow convinced me they're knowledgeable about a topic. If you're into expanding your mind or just laughing out loud, check out the Hey Idiots podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Edging, a horror book club podcast. I'm Bridget.
We never know who's going to go next after Bridget introduces the show.
Okay, that's so Ian. That's Brooke, and we have our first ever. This is first time. Da, 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 da. We have our first guest ever.
Hi. Woo. I'm Kayla. I've actually been lurking in the shadows the whole time. I'm pretty sure.
As so we love for them to
be
do.
Here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You may have heard me on previous episodes of 13, so I'm absolutely psyched. Absolutely psyched to be here.
Yes, that's how we've been blessed to meet a lot of really cool people is through the 13 podcast, having really cool voice actors. Mm-hmm. And Kayla is one of them. So now we're getting into talk podcast instead of audio fiction, something that like Brooke, Ian, and I have known each other for several years now. And we are really good friends. We have a group chat. We talk all the time. We get in front of a mic and sometimes it's like we've never met each other before. Mm. Like all of the talking you were just listening to us have. Sometimes we just like, so this is something new for us. So we're really glad to have you on this journey with all of us.
I'll try to be like witty and charming and entertaining and smart.
That'll be easy for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, stop. I've dabbled in, I mean, I did a TTRPG podcast for a little while, and that's a similar deal. It's one thing to play D&D, like, as a home game. It's another thing to be like, oh, people are going to hear it if I do something. And shout out to my partner, who's a sound designer, audio engineer, who just makes us all sound smart and funny. So it all works out in the end.
I just saw the TikTok of you all with... Was it your dad or his dad?
That's my father.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I almost thought you, because I know you sent me the thing that was like talk about things you want us to shout out, and I was almost like shout out the TikTok I made last night.
Can I show that to Brooke and Bridget real quick?
Absolutely. Oh, I watched it.
Oh, you did? You've seen it?
I definitely did.
It's so good. I've been off TikTok for a really long time and just popped on for very specific reasons. But we're teaching my parents and a family friend how to play Dungeons and Dragons. Because it's such a big part of my partner and I's life. And we're like, you guys have to try this.
Oh, my God.
So we're doing, it was supposed to be one shot. It's turned into a three shot. We're meeting for the second one. We've got my sister on Google Meet from Florida, like at the dinner table with us. And she keeps going, has dad done the joke yet? And we're like, no. And then the second my partner goes, all right, it's time to play. And my dad goes, I hope they play Hot to Go. And I was like, you're joking. So I laughed for a solid
That's
5 minutes.
That's so funny.
And then I was like, do it again, do it again. And then put it online. And my father is a star now. I hope everyone sees.
How is your family liking Dungeons and Dragons? Are they getting really into it? Is this going to be a regular thing?
I really hope so. My little sister has played a couple times and she's a big Survivor fan. And her life mentality is like the queen stays queen. Like she'll play any one game, win, and then never play again. And that's been her experience with D&D. Like she played one where everyone died but her. The next time she played, she like single-handedly killed a monster. She's like, I'm done. I'm never playing again. And this time she's playing my daughter and she's killed everything we've encountered, like every monster we've encountered except for one.
Oh, wow.
My dad was really hesitant to play, but then realized he could kind of play Luke Skywalker, so then he was on board. So he's just playing a guy with a great axe and like hitting stuff.
Yeah.
My mom is accidentally very funny. Mm-hmm. And I think she's having a really good time. And then we've got a family friend who's like kicking butt, killing it, and has been like dying to play D&D. So far, so good.
I know the last time the three of us played D&D, Ian was a horse.
What was I?
You were a centaur.
I was a centaur. I was a centaur. I was a lactose intolerant centaur.
Yes, it became very relevant that you were lactose intolerant because he chose to drink a bucket of milk.
King, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
Went great.
What was the phrase? Like a fistful of yogurt?
Oh my God. Fistful of yogurt.
That's how you build characters, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, what if I played a barbarian and he was tiny and had red hair? And then all of a sudden I started finding, like, Lucky Charms everywhere. And it's like, maybe he's a leprechaun.
I love
that. And, like, becomes the whole bit. I like character creation.
That was my first Dungeons & Dragons, too.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Welcome. I'm a big old D&D person.
Oh, yeah. Very, very fun game. And we, D&D, book reading, all of it's the same. You're creating stuff. You're getting creative. Ian? Dungeons and Edging sounds like a book that Brooke would read.
It does.
It does sound like a book, yeah.
So does Dungeons and Edging. Dungeons and Edging is like really...
crazy. That's a whole other level.
Yeah, that's a different game.
That's our next podcast.
A more intense version of this podcast. It's the whole thing, but you do it in the like sultry audio drama voice.
Would love to.
Oh my God. Oh. Done. Easy. $1 million
has
idea.
The sultry audio voice. Ian, do you?
Not really. No.
We've had you do some sultry stuff though, right?
Have I? Not really. Like, I've done like, you know, because I've got like kids that are old enough to be aware of things.
Yeah.
And their friends are old enough to be aware of things. We've kind of kept me away from doing that stuff.
Yeah. I don't think it was because you weren't good at it. I think you were just like, you became aware that they could be aware and you were like, no.
No, I became aware that their friends' parents listened to our shows.
Yeah.
So that's what happened.
I feel like for me, I don't do sex scenes.
Which I love. Which I love that they listen.
Sex scenes.
But definitely informed the roles that I take on.
Yeah.
I feel like mine is just because of my, I don't know. I don't know how, well, and also, I don't know if I could do it. I feel like I'd get really embarrassed just talking about it. Look at how red I am. But I also feel like my accent, I don't know if my accent is sexy to like do some of the things that Brooke is so talented at doing.
Oh, no, it is.
No, whenever like Brooke started getting her Kentucky accent back, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my job. Because that's kind of my thing in the audio drama voice acting community is being from Central Appalachia. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to lose my job. So if I ever learn how to have a sexy voice, Brooke, you'll have that feeling.
You're coming for me. Honestly, I feel like having an accent and doing sultry stuff is like way hot and totally a vibe. Also having a Kentucky accent is nothing on having a Central Appalachian like accent or dialect.
True.
Your Kentucky accent started coming back. I don't know if you want to talk about this on the show, but the night before we met Kayla in person, because you had a seizure.
Yeah.
Like right after we recorded.
It was while we were recording because Brooke was doing lines and I was like, she's pulling an accent on this one I've never heard before.
I was completely oblivious to it. I was directing and I just it kind of happened so gradually that I heard it on playback and during editing, but I didn't hear it in the room.
I thought it was an artistic choice and it was actually Brooke having a seizure.
Well, and none of us knew, to be fair. Yeah. And a couple of times you guys were like, I think the accent's getting a little strong. And in my head, I was like, the accent? And I realized now I would be able to recognize what was happening as a seizure aura. But at the time I was like, I mean, I just don't feel very good. I was also sick. I had like, I was edging on laryngitis. And so I had been waterfalling throat coat all day.
You had been like taking a ton of that stuff and also just slamming Red Bulls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was always slamming Red Bulls. This was, I actually... No, that day I didn't have any caffeine.
Oh, really? I thought it was the opposite. Never
no,
mind.
I didn't have any caffeine that day because
I remembered that wrong.
I was so aggressive. I mean, I drink Red Bull like so much other days, but because I was drinking so much Throat Coat with honey.
You're the only person that's tried to peer pressure me into like drinking Red Bulls.
It happened to me first. And I was like, no, that tastes like ass. And then I tried the flavored ones and I was like, oh, actually, it's really good.
And then like your roommate called and told me what was going on. Mm-hmm. And also told me, because it was like not too far from COVID, that no one else was allowed to be at the hospital. So I just called Bridget and we got real sad together.
Aww. And yeah. You were on your way.
And I think,
yeah, I was coming in hot with my partner and my hedgehog. And we got there and you're like, by the way, I just had a seizure. It's nice to meet you.
It's just like, it's so dramatic. It's like so dramatic to have a seizure. It's like really it's hard so to deal with. There's no chill way out of it. Like it just really happens very intensely. So, you know. Yeah, well, rolling in hot.
I'm glad, as always, I'm glad you're not actively having a seizure now and you're
me
doing
too.
Better. Yeah, I literally can't imagine. I can't imagine, especially while recording. I think I would lose my mind.
Well, the thing about having a grand mal seizure that's really cool is that you don't remember it. So,
oh, in that case, then.
It's almost,
you know,
like it's not even
did
worth it.
Did you say grandma? Yeah.
I said grand mal, but it
M-A-L?
Did sound like, yeah.
For like the first 30 years of my life, I thought it was called the same thing that you're
grandma
you're
seizure.
Thinking, grandma seizure. Yeah.
That's that accent I got back. It's just grandma seizure.
It became grandma seizure while you were having one.
Yeah.
Stop. To double back.
Speaking of seizures, Ian.
How was this?
Before speaking of seizures, let's seize where the audience can find Kayla before we get into
nice.
The story.
Yes.
Very nice.
You see that organic pivot?
Yeah. We're really good at segues.
No, if you want to find me, I mean, I'm online everywhere at Kayla Temshiv. I've got my website and stuff like that. But right now, the thing I'm really working on, and I just finished recording, so it makes me so sad, but I'm in Poe Evermore with Bloody FM, and my first episode just aired. Unless you count, I think it was episode 3 that I did background screaming for. They were like, we need the screams of a small child. And my partner is sound designing and is like, believe it or not, there are not a lot of like small child getting exercised screams readily available on the internet. So that was my debut. But yeah, it's an Edgar Allan Poe retelling. I get to play Annabelle Lee, Anna Ravenel, which is very exciting for me personally because I'm a massive nerd. But that's the big thing. And then I'm on I don't know what else I'm allowed to say. Maybe nothing. Maybe other things that I'm not allowed to talk about yet.
Okay.
Stay tuned.
It's mysterious.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Yeah, I should just actually have just led with that.
I think
just been like, I'm not allowed to tell you.
I think that the baby screams count, but also your upcoming episode like really counts.
Yeah.
Like they both count, but yeah.
I don't know.
And I have a southern accent.
The baby
one.
Scream could be a very niche, or the child scream could be a very niche.
We're all about filling voids that don't exist on the internet already, which is
not very monetarily valuable, but
let's not travel down that train of thought too much further.
No, but I'm a professional child screamer. If you need the screams of a child without a child's, hi, my name is Kayla Temshiv.
Put that on the business card just like that.
Professional child. I kind of want to put girl who dies as like my Twitter
That's
bio.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm worried people are going to be like, excuse me? So
they'll
I'm
be
trying
fine.
Not to put myself in that. Cube, that box. There we go. That's the actual expression.
All boxes are cubes, I think.
But not all cubes are boxes.
Wow. Mm. Yeah,
I know. I'm really coming in with the profound one-liners today.
And that's the show.
And scene.
Alrighty, Ian. So Ian's going to be not reading a book for us today. Ian can't read. Ian is going to be talking about a book today.
Really going to break those Spotify infringement censors.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, Ian is not reading a book. Okay, what are you talking about, though?
I am talking about... So this is our second actual John Darnielle book.
Mountain Goats.
The guy that did that was in the Mountain Goats that I found out when I read... So I figured out some things about Devil House. If you're listening in order, we did Devil House by John Darnielle some time ago. And the... author, I found out, like, with 10% of the book left, was the guy from the Mountain Goats. And I sent a quote to my friend, and she wrote back, and she said, is that the Mountain Goat, like, the Mountain Goats guy? And I was like, no. And I looked it up, and I was like, oh, wow, it's the Mountain Goats guy. So, yeah, this is the second book from him. The first book is something called Wolf in the White Van, which we haven't covered, and I don't know if we'll cover or not. Devil House was the third book. This is the second book, but I'm finding them as I find them. So we're going back in time, I guess. Yeah. They're not connected. You don't have to know anything about one for the other. They're completely separate novels. But yeah, that's what we're doing. We're doing Universal Harvester by John Darnielle. First of all, what do we do? How does this show work?
Yeah.
What do? We rate the book. That's right.
Yes.
We rate the.
We are going to be doing that. Sorry. I Googled. I was like, oh, God, what's my favorite Mountain Goats song? Because I was like singing it in my head, but I couldn't remember. See America, right? But first, before we get into any of the book covers, we got to see if you all at home could get the delicious porch meat or whatever other subscription that we can sell to you.
There
porch
we go.
Porch meat is my favorite, though.
Yeah, hopefully it's a meal kit box that leaves food for too long on your porch. That's what we really go for. Yeah.
And if you don't like meat, you could have porch vegetables, porch grains. All of it's good. Mm-hmm. And all of it could be coming to you.
It's exclusively how we make our living. So, yeah, get that porch meat, y'all. Don't come to a point in your life where a bear starts to think of you as a food source. just don't do it.
I've been there before.
Who hasn't? Okay, we're back, I guess.
So I hear that we have two book covers this time.
We have two book covers this time. One of them, I think, and I didn't look too much into this, but I think one of these is the physical book cover and one of these is the audio book cover. I think when I sent them... when I sent, yeah, I know, right? When I sent them to Kayla, I thought maybe it was an original and then an updated, but now that I'm looking at it, I think it's audio versus... hardcover or paperback
paper.
Or physical? Mm-hmm. Physical, that's what we're going for. So, Kayla, would you describe the first one to us?
I would love to. This one is the audio cover. It is very clearly the audio cover, as it has the intentional look of like when you press on your computer screen a little bit and it gets all wavy. Oh. If anyone else has done that, or if you try and take a picture with your phone of your computer screen... That's kind of the overlay.
I'm also realizing in the moment that it literally has read by the author at the very bottom.
Yes. You know, it was all the research I did.
It's your observation skills, Ian, that I think truly sets you apart from every other artist I've known.
Thank you.
It's also notably a novel, as it says so in the middle. Dead Center. It says Universal Harvester, Dead Center, a novel. A little further down, John Darnielle, is that what you said?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Author of The Wolf in White Van, read by the author. And it's kind of like a cornfield that we're peering through at like child height. And then it's got like a kind of like vapor wavy, like green, blue, pink, that image when you take a photo of your computer sky. So it's a little psychedelic, a little trippy. I'm getting from it that this is about a farm.
Okay. Should we do both of them at the same time?
I mean, I'm happy to keep talking.
Voting on both of them?
Yeah.
We can like, and then we can see which one Ian actually hates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think I have an idea.
You do. You know which one it is. Okay. Brooke, do you want to do the second one?
Sure. So the other cover to me is serving, it's also definitely serving corn. It's serving farm. So it's also serving Men in Black, weirdly. It's like a starry black night sky with a barn, and there's this really interesting like tricolor thing happening where there's like blues and then like yellow going into green, and I guess like more than tricolor, there's like these reds in the background. It looks like a really good book cover, but from probably like 20 years earlier. It looks kind of like old for when I would assume this book came out, but the text has a similar kind of thing as the other image, where it looks like a photograph of a screen. And it looks like it's also glitching out. And it's very, even the font is very Men in Black on the text. It's very, very typical sans serif font.
All right. I'm going to read the synopsis and then we can vote. We can give it our initial ratings. And we're going to come back at the end and rate it again once we've actually gone through the book and see if we were right, whether we like it more or less. See how our thoughts evolve as this thing goes on. Jeremy works in the video hut in Nevada, Iowa. It's a small town in the center of the state. But when a local school teacher comes in to return her copy of Targets, an old movie starring Boris Karloff, one Jeremy himself has ordered for the store, she has an odd complaint. There's something on the tape, she says, but doesn't elaborate. Mm-hmm. 2 days later, a different customer returns a different tape, a new release, and she says it's not defective exactly, but it's altered. There's another movie on this tape.
Ooh.
So
okay.
I'm going to say, from the book cover alone, I'm going to give it... I'm trying to think of what is a good, what is a corn thing?
Corn stalk?
Corn
stalk?
So
I have noticed zero corn in this description, which was very surprising to me.
There's going to be corn.
Oh, thank goodness.
There's going to be corn, yeah.
I'm going to say, I'm actually going to go into specifically the ears of corn, because I do love corn as a vegetable. I'm going to say 3 out of 5 ears of corn.
Oh, we're going on a 5 scale.
Mm-hmm. 3.
We're really, really condensing this.
We'll do 7 out of 10. Okay. 7 out of 10.
I didn't mean to.
7, no.
Okay.
Hey, that's
7.34 out of 10 corn ears for the cover. From the description, a full 8 corn ears.
Okay. Okay. Uh-huh.
Brooke, how many corn ears for you?
So I was on a pretty similar wavelength. I think that from the cover that I described, I could be swayed by how much I love Men in Black and how much I think it has the same aesthetic. I'm going to say, with the cover and the description, 8 out of 10 ears of corn. With just the cover, imagine seeing it in a bookstore without the description, maybe like 6 ears of corn out of 10.
Understand. Kayla?
I have strong and confusing feelings
about
this, because when I saw, and I don't know if we're on the same page or not, when I first saw these, I strongly preferred the second cover.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But hearing the description, I feel like the first cover is a more apt description for what I now think the book is going to be. Mm-hmm. Because when I saw second cover, it's giving aliens.
Mm-hmm.
I would pick up second cover. It gives me 7 years of corn out of 10 years of corn,
mm-hmm.
I would say probably. But knowing now that it has to do with like an altered movie tape, I'm thinking the first cover might be a better, more accurate cover.
Just because of like the glitchiness in the...
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I look... I mean, I want to put my I'm trying to think of ways to work corn into this analogy. Sorry. I want to like put my proverbial foot in my mouth, but I guess it would be the proverbial corn in my mouth. Mm-hmm. And I want to be proven wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, right now I'm giving it 7 ears of corn because I am hesitant about where the corn is coming from. Mm-hmm. And all I mean right. that metaphorically and literally.
Okay. I think the reason I like that second one is because I am an X-Files boy, mm-hmm. and that's such an X-Files cover. Also, mm-hmm. like, driving in, like, rural areas at night, like, kind of freaks me out a little bit, especially the later it gets and the fewer cars are on the road. Like, yeah. you remember when we were driving back from Dallas?
Yeah.
And I get, like, if there's people around or it's, like, a big highway or something, it's fine. But if I don't know where I am mm-hmm. and, like, my GPS is going to go out or something, I can start to have like panic attacks over that shit. Mm-hmm. And this puts me like in that space for sure. So mm-hmm. it creeps me out. I love it. Okay. Should we get into it?
Mm-hmm. Let's.
So, so what was our ratings?
So we had ears of corn.
It was basically sevens across the board, right?
Yeah. Seven.
7.348.
That feels fair.
Seven. Yeah,
I think we had that
sevens
would be.
And eight. Do we want to like combine it all together as like maybe an averaged out 7.25 or something? I think we had some sevens. We had fair. Like 1.8 in there.
That's good math.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was gonna try and guess a 7 point something to it. I was like, we're gonna go with Ian's. Yep.
All right, let's get into the story.
I know we're so excited to do that, but I have to pee.
Oh. So. Okay.
The suspense is already killing me.
Okay, so let's get into the story. Like we heard in the synopsis, this is a story that takes place in a little town that's spelled like Nevada, or Nevada, however you say it, but it's actually pronounced Nevada, which would drive me crazy if I were reading it, but listening to it, I was just able to avoid how it was spelled altogether. Mm-hmm. But he mentions 2 or 3 times that it's pronounced differently than Nevada. And that would just bother me every time I saw the word, knowing that it wasn't pronounced the way that I like it to be pronounced, or the way that I recognize it as being pronounced. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But the opening scene takes place in a video rental store in the winter of 1999 and 2000. Kayla, how much do you know about how video rental stores worked?
I know that they had the Barbie Fairytopia movies when I was a child.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And that's how they work.
That's about it. That's yeah. it.
So I'll kind of go through it a little bit. We had this little one here. We're actually recording in my hometown. It was called Video Selection. It doesn't exist anymore, obviously. But it was, I think it's a liquor store on the bypass now. On the 35 mile an hour section of it.
Which one?
It's if you're going away from the interstate, it's on the left.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that used to be a video rental store. And that was the one that we went to most when I was a kid. So you walk in and there's all these shelves of movies and they're split up by like genre, right? There's like a new releases section and there's a movie box like on display, like the box that you would buy if you were buying the movie from a store. And behind it, there would be these clear shell cases with the tape actually in it. That way you could take the tape up to the thing and check it out and leave the empty box showing like the movie poster and stuff on it. So people walking by would be like, oh, this store has that movie. They just don't have it right now. Mm-hmm. So you would pick up the shell case, take it up to the counter, and check it out. If it's like a new release, there might be like a dozen or more of those up there, and it might take up like an entire, like when Titanic came out, I think, like an entire shelf was just Titanic.
And that was 2 VHS.
Yeah, not to mention the double VHS.
Yeah, and I don't know, it was kind of magical. You could walk through, and there was just all these little options. And you could either return them in person or you could drop them in like a mail slot after hours.
Like the library.
Like yes. the library, exactly.
There we go.
When I was a kid, going to the movie store was so cool because there were all these movies that I like totally wasn't allowed to watch, but like I could look at the covers and read the backs of them and it felt like, I don't know.
It felt like you were watching them.
It felt like you were watching them, and it felt like I was more grown up than I was. And it was like anticipation, like maybe one day I'll get to watch this movie, you know, that kind of, I don't know, it was fun.
That was me with the movie Ginger Snaps.
Oh, man.
Oh, God, Ginger Snaps was such a good movie. Anyway.
Kayla, if you haven't seen Ginger Snaps, watch it for the
holidays. No idea.
Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah, go watch Ginger Snaps.
I actually still need to watch Ginger Snaps because I only read the VHS cover when I was a kid.
Movie night.
Yeah.
Movie night.
That was me with The Mist as a child.
Okay.
My mom mentioned that it was terrifying, so I Googled it and read the plot summary, and I was like, whoa, and then never saw the movie.
See, you saying that you Googled it is such
That's fair.
It's like such an interesting take on that.
Yeah, I could no longer go to the Blockbuster and look at the... I just went straight to the internet.
Yeah.
I love that.
Times, they are a-changing.
Time differences.
All right. So the guy that works behind the desk at the movie store in 1999, his name is Jeremy. He's going to be our main character. If you listen to our episode about Devil House, this book gets started a lot quicker. You are right in the plot by, like, I listened to the audiobook by the second or third minute. We've gotten our first, like, we understand what the storyline's going to be. It's also a lot shorter than Devil House. Devil House weaves around a lot. This one does too, but not nearly as much as Devil House did. And we loved Devil House. Didn't we end up with 10s on that one, I think?
I think so.
Yeah. This book gets started so much quicker. We get kind of a description of the store. It's not a Blockbuster or like a Hollywood Video. It's like a video selection. It's a local store with a local owner that is kind of at this point getting boxed out by those other like Blockbuster or Hollywood Video type stores, which also don't realize that they're about to just completely get destroyed by the internet. So they're fighting over this little patch of like real estate that isn't going to exist in a few years, which makes this entire story pretty cool because it all takes place in this setting that no one knows is going to be gone forever. It's pretty cool.
Very 13.
When was this book written?
This was written really recently, I think, like within the last 10 years.
Very cool.
But I think he does a lot like I do, where like so many of my stories take place in like the late 90s. Even though I'm like writing them right now, you know, I think that's kind of what's going on here. So in this opening scene, after we get a little walk through the video store, a woman named Stephanie comes in and returns a movie. She hangs back, letting a couple of other people go in front of her. And then when she's the last person in line and there's no one around to hear what she says to Jeremy, you know, there's something on this one. There's something on this tape. And she hands it to him. He thinks that she means it's like a defect, like it cuts out or there's static or something, which is a thing that happened. These VHS tapes could get damaged and, you know, stuff like that would happen. There'd be blotches and blobs in them for a few minutes and then they go away. So he thinks that that's what she's talking about. She just asks him to tell the owner, a woman named Sarah Jane, about it, and then she leaves. So we're like rolling right away with this little foreshadowing. We're in a video rental store. There's something on the tapes that shouldn't be there, and we don't know what that is yet. At the end of the night, Jeremy goes home where he lives with his dad. Nevada's like this rural Iowa town. From context clues that we'll get later on, it's like near enough to some larger towns that it's not like the complete middle of nowhere, but it's probably like, you know, most towns that you'd pass on like a Midwestern interstate. It's like commuting distance from Des Moines, but like the outer edge of commuting distance. So for us here, like around Lexington, this would be like Berea or Mount Sterling, you know, you're like 45 minutes or an hour away from a not that big city, you know? So it's not like you're driving an hour into New York or San Francisco. You're like driving an hour into like a medium to small size city. So very outer edge of commuting distance, but not a suburb, not middle of nowhere either. Jeremy's mom died 6 years ago, and he was 16 at the time. It was a single car accident. She went off the road somehow, and now it's just him and his dad. The two of them sit down, and they watch a movie together, a little tradition that they have. A lot of times, Jeremy brings movies home from the store that are left in the check-in bin, you know, they're being returned and he hasn't checked them in yet. So he'll take them home overnight and watch them and then check them in the morning so he can like not have to pay for it. The author does this cool thing here in the story. Jeremy's dad brings up a job opening that he saw somewhere. It's like somewhere other than this movie store, right? Where his like son in his early 20s is working. So he brings up this job opening kind of passive aggressive. I wouldn't even say passive aggressively, but just sort of like, hey, just letting you know, I saw this out there. The author says, or does this like cool thing. I'm going to quote directly from the book to make it work. So in some versions of this story, there's an argument here because Jeremy thinks that his father's being nosy and because he's ashamed that being 22 years old and not having made anything of himself yet. He's resentful when someone reminds him about that. In these versions, Jeremy asks his father to give him some breathing room. And Steve Held, who is a good father and shares with his son an incapacitating loss, thinks to himself, stay out of your son's way. He'll find himself if you let him. In some other versions, Jeremy stays awake for a couple more hours, maybe watching another movie he brought home, but he's unable to focus on it. And in the morning, he tells his father to write down some of those job listings, and he ends up getting a soil testing position in Newton, eventually transferring to a bigger lab back home in Nevada. In this version, he keeps his job. In this version, he means like in the story we're about to hear. In this version, he keeps his job at the video hut, and then something else happens. So we get this little cliffhanger. The author doesn't tell us what that other thing is, the other thing that happens, but I think I know what it is. I think it's an ad break.
Stop.
So we're back and we're here with Kayla Timshiff. Kayla, what are you thinking so far? How's this one starting off for you?
I'm thinking so many things. I think it's a really strong start. You could tell that the author's voice is really unique. Just that last bit that you read with the like, in some versions of this story, he does this and then others, he does that. I'm like, ooh, this author's a thinker. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna like the way that they write. So far I'm thinking if I like the story, I might need to actually read the book.
Ooh, okay. So far we're thinking the rating's going to go up.
It's hard because the plot can be amazing and the writing can be iffy, but that little tidbit there kind of sold me on the writing.
Oh, there's so much more where that came from.
So I'm excited for the plot. So far, not seeing any corn though.
No corn yet. Yeah. No, you're going to see a lot of corn.
Crossing my fingers.
It all sort of hinges on the corn.
But you know what?
There's no corn, I'm leaving.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll tell you what's better than corn, and that is the 1999 classic, She's All That. So it's okay. The next day, and Jeremy's back at work at the video store, and another customer comes in, and she returns a copy of She's All That, and she says that there's something wrong with the tape. It'll cut out, and in the middle, it just kind of becomes something else.
The way that She's All That is the perfect pull for something like disturbing or horrible to happen in the middle of it is very good.
Oh, it's, look, we all know that there's something a little menacing about Freddie Prinze Jr.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
You know, it cuts out in the middle. It becomes something else. It's the second time that he's heard this in 2 days. So he set it aside and said that he'd look at it. We get this cool bit about the routine of opening and closing the store. Here's another one of those passages that I think you'll like, Kayla. I'm going to quote again from the book. Yes. He looked around the store as he was shutting down. It was the same material they use for barns now, just with different stuff in it. In the dark, you could see just how temporary it was. He rifled through the return bin for another tape in case he couldn't sleep, and he stopped at Taco John's for a family pack. Then he got onto Old Highway 30 and headed home. They plowed the road that morning and several more times that afternoon. Everyone was driving a little slower to be careful. This was the feel of the season for Jeremy. Slow cars moving over icy roads in the dark. Heavy branches on trees. There was a melody to it, and you could catch it if you weren't trying too hard. Dad was already home when he got there. They ate their tacos together at the table. like a family.
Jeremy sounds like a real one. Mm-hmm. Jeremy makes sense to me. He's like, I went home, I got some tacos, and I drove through the snow. I'm like, you're so right, King.
The most emotionally eviscerating part of that is the Taco Johns.
Yeah.
I grew up with the Taco Johns in my town, and I feel so shook to my core that he casually name dropped it.
It's the like a family for me, because it's like that Midwest stoicism where these two men who are like desperately missing his mom and his wife are just sitting down eating dinner like a family and neither of them acknowledging it.
I also have, am I allowed to make predictions?
Yeah.
On where I think this is going? Okay, because of that, there's such a good, because I've seen the cover of the book, and the cover of the book, I see a barn, and it's like, it's made of the same stuff the barns used to be made of. Are we in for, like, a time jump? I feel like we're in for a little bit of a time jump, and the video store is replaced by a farm and a lot of corn.
You're not entirely wrong about a time jump, but you are a little bit wrong. Well, let's see. Let's see what happens.
I'll take a partial, not entirely wrong.
I love the part about the barn material where he talks about how temporary it all is. And like, we know that this is all going away in a couple of years when Netflix comes out. And
that was such a crazy time.
I know. All right.
Video stores.
R.I.P. That night after his dad went down to bed, Jeremy stayed up to watch that tape of She's All That that the customer returned, the one that had something else on it. And about halfway through the movie, it cuts out, and there's this dark scene that Jeremy couldn't really make out. It lasts a couple of minutes, and then She's All That comes back on. The next morning, he comes into work, and Sarah Jane, the owner, is still there. There's a snowstorm coming in. So there's a rush of traffic, people picking up movies because they were expecting to be snowed in for the weekend. So Kayla, the thing about movie stores is that they only carried a certain number of movies, right? So if there's a snowstorm coming, you got to the movie store as quick as you could because all the good movies would be picked over and then you'd be stuck with either nothing or just shit you've seen before or bad options to like sit at home and watch with your family. If you didn't want to like watch whatever movies you had in the cabinet, right?
Okay, yeah.
So that's what's happening here. There's a big rush coming because of the snowstorm and people are trying to pick up movies to sit around and watch at home while they're snowed in.
Bread, milk, and Bruce Willis.
That's right.
Oh my God. So wild.
Yeah.
I can't even, because like in my brain, it's like, oh yeah, it's like at the start of COVID when everyone like bulk bought toilet paper. But movies have always been so readily accessible to me. I can't imagine storming a movie store.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like streaming where like any number of people, large or small, can be watching at the same time. Like there's a finite supply.
It's like, look, we have 10 copies of Titanic.
Yep, exactly. If you want to see if Leonardo DiCaprio could have fit on that door or not, you better get there early.
Stay
you know?
Tuned. Yeah.
So after that rush is over, the snow is beginning. A customer comes into the store. And the place is completely empty. It's Stephanie, that first customer that came in and mentioned that something was wrong with the tape. Not the one that brought in She's All That, but the first one. She comes back in. The two of them went to high school together. She's a little bit older than him, but like as old as you can be, having gone to high school with somebody, like 3 years maybe. Mm-hmm. So she asks if he'd taken a look at the tape that she brought in, and he hasn't. Jeremy finds the tape, and they put it up on the TV. There was a TV in the store a lot of times, like hanging up there, and they would put like new releases up on the TV and like let it play through to like make you want to rent that movie or whatever. So they've got this empty store. They put this tape in and they're watching it on the in-store TV that's like on display for customers. And there are two scenes that shouldn't be there. The first is dark footage of an empty chair in either a barn or a tool shed. He can't tell which. And the second scene is that same chair again, but now there's somebody sitting in it, a woman wearing jeans and a t-shirt with a canvas bag over her head.
No, absolutely not.
We think
that is genuinely so frightening.
So at first we think that she's like bound to the chair, but she's not. She stands up and she starts making these strange movements. She raises an arm over her head. She starts standing on one foot. a hand appears from behind the camera. The person holding the camera is like reaching out into the frame, right? This person is approaching the woman with the canvas bag over her head, and he starts painting a face onto the bag.
Nope. Dislike.
Absolutely not.
And then the movie cuts back in.
Yeah, of course it does.
So, not great. We don't love that. Stephanie and Jeremy decide to begin a little ragtag investigation, which we love. We do love that. We love a ragtag investigation. They meet up, and Stephanie has already put together some notes based on context clues from the tape. There's something called a corn crib, which is unique to like Iowa and Minnesota. In one of those clips, you can see outside for a second, and there's a corn crib. Now, when I heard corn crib, I thought of like something you would put a baby down in that might have corn on it or something, like painted up like with corn decorated, you know, whatever. So, but I Googled it, and actually a corn crib is this. So,
is this the other image that
you
sent?
Yeah, this is the other picture I sent. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely not what I thought it was. And that makes a lot more sense for someone to like see outside, right? For the listeners, this is a structure kind of with a conveyor leading to the top that's like, I guess, dropping ears of corn into this canister. And it's open to the air like that, I think, so that it's less susceptible to like get stuffy and wet and mold up in there. So that's what a corn crib is. And they see one of these for like a split second as the camera like pans outside before the movie cuts back in. So, So there's this corn crib. Based on that, she thinks that they're going to be able to like drive around and maybe like find this place. And they think it's local because of this corn crib or like somewhere in the area. I don't know. It's, not a great plan, but it's definitely not like somebody in a faraway factory like cutting in images or cutting in film. Mm-hmm. This is someone like from the upper Midwest, and the fact that they're ending up in this store just kind of leads them to believe that it's someone nearby. So after some hesitation from Jeremy, they agreed to just go driving around looking for that particular corn crib or anywhere else that could like jump out at them. They don't find anything because as plans go, this is like the shittiest plan ever.
I was going to say, Jeremy's seen enough movies to be like, I don't know.
But this is
might
like,
not be a good idea.
This is such a teenager thing to do though, right? Because you're like thinking, I just need to do something, right? So let's just like
get in our cars and go.
Just go. Let's just see if we can find it, you know? So we're going to switch gears for just a minute. Jeremy, at this point, you know, has told his boss, Sarah Jane, about the two tapes, about She's All That. And I believe the first tape was Targets, which I've never seen before. I think it's like a 70s movie or something. We're going to shift to Sarah Jane's perspective. She's taken She's All That home with her after Jeremy told her about the extra footage inside of it. And then she just like forgot to look at it. She just got sidetracked and never really did anything about it. She eventually just brought it back to the store to put it on the rack. But then another customer came in and complained directly to Sarah Jane, not to Jeremy. So Jeremy's unaware of this second complaint. And she takes it home again to look at it. When Jeremy returns to the store, he finds that the door is locked, but he uses his key to get in. He finds Sarah Jane inside the store watching She's All That again, this time on the in-store camera. Or in-store TV, rather. And on that in-store TV, it's a better quality TV than Jeremy has at home. She's able to see things that he couldn't see when he originally watched it. So what had appeared to be a dark room in a dark space had actually been a tarp on the ground, and you can see two moving figures underneath of it.
No.
They're moving around. The camera's moving around the room. Someone's walking while they're filming it. And just like Jeremy, Stephanie and Sarah Jane, they've all gotten like roped into these tapes, into this mystery now. She takes them both home and she watches them again later on that night. And she's taking notes. She's like doing some work for the store anyway. She's like, you know, doing accounting stuff and all that while she's got this tape just rolling in the background. she begins like rehearsing how she might call her distributor to tell them what's wrong, or how she might like call the police to let them know that something really strange is going on. And that's when the credits start to roll. And this is where Kiss Me by Sixpence None the Richer is like jingling on. Yes. And it's this very like rom-com, you know, happy ending thing going on. And then it happens again. There's another scene, and no one's seen this yet because no one ever watches the credits.
So true.
And the only reason that Sarah Jane sees it is because she was just kind of sidetracked doing her own thing. And she hears the music cut out and other sound cut in. This time, the scene is like, it's not dark. It's in broad daylight. It's not inside. There's a woman on a driveway, and she's crawling away from the camera, crawling away from our perspective. She looks up, and there's blood splatter on her face, and in the distance, there's an open field, and there's a farmhouse. Do you know how, like, every town has at least, like, one really distinctive place or one weird house or one, like, you know, just thing everyone kind of knows, right?
Yeah.
The house that Sarah Jane sees in the distance that catches her eye, it's one of those places, and she knows exactly where this is. So Sarah Jane, independent of Jeremy and Stephanie, begins her own investigation. Now, next morning, Sarah Jane wakes up early and she drives out to this farmhouse in a little like unincorporated part of the county called Collins. And she knocks on the door.
No, Sarah Jane, you had me and then you lost me.
So a woman answers. She's named Lisa Sample, which is a pretty, that's a good name, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good name. Sarah Jane makes up a reason for the visit. She's been like rehearsing it on the whole drive out there. I'm not going to get into what it is because I honestly don't remember it. But she ends up going around to like look at the driveway and at the shed behind the house. Once she's inside the shed, she looks around the place and she recognizes it as the interior of the building on the spliced pieces of tape. Eventually, she runs out of like reasons for being there. And then she shows a woman, the woman who lives there, Lisa Sample, a still photo from the tapes that she's printed out, like on her home printer. You know, she's just printed out the still image.
To be clear, she would have had to like capture that also.
I know. I actually thought about this, and this doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, because to rewind a VHS tape is like laborious.
Well, you can't screenshot it and then print it.
No.
Yeah.
She could have had a digital camera.
She could have, yeah.
Yeah. So
it would have had that little wavy screen thing.
In 1999, though, I don't know that she would have had a digital camera.
Yeah. It's weird that she printed it at home.
If it was a DVD, and I don't know if DVDs were a thing yet, but if it was a DVD, she could have had that in a CD-ROM on a computer and screenshotted it. We're giving this way too much thought.
Yeah.
I'll suspend my disbelief one time, and it's going
to
be about the picture.
So she runs out of reasons to be there. She shows her the still image from the She's All That tape. And she asks Lisa if that's her place and, you know, pointing to the printouts. She says it looks like it, but, you know, it could really be any place, which, of course, is bullshit. This is a very distinctive place, right? It couldn't just be any place. And then Sarah asks her if she knows the woman in the video, the one in the driveway. And Lisa Sample says no. The next thing that happens is one of those passages again where the story could go in a few directions, just like we did before. So I'm going to quote again from the book. There's a variation of this story that is so pervasive that is often not thought of as a variation, but as the central thread. Sarah Jane returns to Video Hut a little bit after 5 and describes to Jeremy much of what she found in Collins, but leaves out several important details. That the house itself is directly across from Bob Peach's place, that she stood at the farmhouse door for several minutes before knocking on it, that the woman who answered the door, named Lisa, and they spent much of the afternoon talking in her living room. The story that Sarah Jane brings home from Collins is deliberately incomplete, but it presents itself with an air of totality as though there was nothing more to say. Jeremy's disappointed, but what can he do? He's out of ideas. His memories of the scenes in these tapes dry up, and in later years, he remembers them as like this moment of fancy, something he dreamed up because he was young and bored. This is the nail over which this particular narrative of the story's tires inevitably drive, which I love that line. Holy shit. Jeremy was young, but not so young. His mother's accident had taken care of that. And while Jeremy's high school classmates had always been itching for action, hitting the highways for Minneapolis or Chicago on the weekends, he had stayed home. When he saw himself all grown up, he saw himself in Nevada, maybe owning a store or managing a business in Des Moines. If Jeremy thought of the future at all, it looked like the present. This bored rendering of the young Jeremy rings false, and I put more stock into the one I see this afternoon. Standing behind the counter, eating a sandwich, reading the classified ads in the Des Moines Register, the Jeremy who's there when Sarah Jane gets back from Collins, throwing herself wildly through the doors, her face darting deer-like first to the right and then to the left. The story she brings out, so fresh with its insult that she takes over an hour to tell it, like a person saying things out loud to make sure that she doesn't forget them. A person testing things in her mind against the hard surfaces of the world before venturing the claim that yes, they are true and real and have form and shape and weight and meaning. So what did Sarah find in Collins? I think that these ads are about to tell us. I fucking love doing that.
I know you do.
The way we all throw our bodies back.
Yeah.
I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of feelings.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's get into them. So Kayla, what are you thinking?
I have so much. Okay, so my gut instinct, and I'm this person because I love a mystery. I'm like, cool, so what would I do? And right away, it becomes pretty clear that like someone's filming like a snuff film, question mark, and which is already super concerning. So, I mean, I'd call the police. But let's say we're naturally curious and we don't do that. I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, like take it out of the box. Unwind the film and see how they've attached it. Like, I'm curious. Like, and then right away, if you did that, you would see all of the different spots it's been altered. Sarah Jane had me when she's like, we got to talk to the distributors because yes, like someone is getting this to you somehow. Whether it's be like a cry for help or whether it's someone who wants their like twisted work known to the masses, like someone is out of their way getting this to a distributor, getting it to the store, or they're taking home the videos, cutting it and rewinding it.
The thing about VHS tapes and anything with tape is that literally anybody can do anything to it and just sort of put it back together. You can literally cut and splice the film.
So, like, they should be looking at who's rented both of those DVDs. Because Sarah Jane, I loved her until she went to the place by herself. Maybe I was just, like, born in a time where we're so afraid of getting, like, serial killed. That, like, anytime I go somewhere by myself, I've told two people where I'm going and what the address is. Like, if I go pick up something off Facebook Marketplace, I text my boyfriend. I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm going here. If I don't text you back, I've been scooped. Like, Sarah Jane's just like, nah, I got this. And I'm like, girl.
Yeah, you don't have to have this. Also, there are no stakes that you're aware of. That's
no, like, you could call the police.
Well, let's get into what she actually does.
There are people for this. Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
So when we left, Sarah Jane was getting back to the video store after she visited that farmhouse and a woman named Lisa Sample who lived there. She bursts in and she tells Jeremy what happened, that she saw the place, that she was there. What do you think she thought of Lisa Sample?
I think she shouldn't have shown Lisa Sample of a picture because I think that's a bad idea.
It was especially a bad idea because she was showing Lisa Sample a picture of herself. The woman on the tape... who was crawling away from the camera that we assume was getting snuffed, answered the door.
But did she recognized that?
Yep.
And then she showed her a picture of herself and said, have you seen this woman?
She appears to have done that, yes.
I don't know what's up with this girl.
Yeah, no. Sarah Jane, I got questions for you. about your process here, friend. But yeah, yeah, I was like, if the girl that lives there is the girl on the... So, I mean, clearly she's okay, or we're doing like a twin sister situation.
Yeah. I have to make a... I just feel so stressed that homeboy's mom is somehow involved in this.
Oh, yeah. She died in a single car accident mysteriously.
Yeah, I'm like...
Or you said like supposedly or something earlier.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know we will.
Now, remember, Sarah Jane found this last bit of tape the night before, and Jeremy and Stephanie are unaware of this until mm-hmm. she comes barging into the video store, right? She doesn't know, or they didn't watch the credits of She's All That, because who does, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you're like investigating a tape, you're just muscle memory to just turn it off when the credits roll is just going to happen, you know?
Especially if you have to wait for it to rewind. Let's get started.
Yeah. So
I wonder why he picked She's, or why the author picked She's All That, because we're spending a lot of time on this.
Why did any of us pick She's All That in 1999?
Like, no one's watching the Targets movie.
No? Well, somebody did.
Yeah, at the very beginning. But
we're gonna get into why that is in a little bit. Actually,
okay,
we're gonna learn a little bit about what the selection of these movies is about.
If at any point it's interesting, Ian, I did Google the Targets movie, and so I won't say anything now.
Okay. Wait, is it a 70s movie?
It. The tagline of it, I literally was like, "Oh my god!" Yes, it is. It is like a famous action-y movie. But I will at some point read you the tagline. It's a very different movie than She's All That.
Okay.
I have not seen either of these movies, so I am existing solely in limbo.
All right. So we've got these two separate investigations going on, right? We've got Jeremy and Stephanie kind of running their dipshit investigation. Mm-hmm. And Sarah Jane, who has already figured out what all this stuff is. We've gotten it all together. So... they haven't known about each other's investigations up to this point. Jeremy now knows about both of them. Stephanie is still in the dark. And Sarah Jane is in the dark about Stephanie. So the next day, when Jeremy comes in for his afternoon shift, he's expecting to find Sarah Jane there. But instead, he finds another coworker named Ezra. And Sarah Jane had called Ezra, told him that she needed him to cover her shifts for the rest of the week. There are a few other things going on, and Sarah Jane's absence is, like, pretty suspicious, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into what all those things are just for time, but it all feels a little fishy in the context of the book.
I had a question.
Yeah.
teacher, please. At one point when you were reading the narration, you said the word I. Do we have a clear idea of who's narrating this story if it is not Sarah Jane or Jeremy?
It's just I think it's like a God's eye view kind of narrator. Mm-hmm. So the eye comes from John Darnielle, I think himself.
Okay.
That he like throws in there periodically as like an observer. He's just punching in, like breaking the fourth wall, I think.
Or there's some sort of unidentified narrator who's piecing this together that we're supposed to like imagine into the space.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and give away that that never comes in story-wise. There's never like a, oh, and the narrator is this person. That doesn't end up happening or anything like that. But I think that's kind of how it's structured.
Cool. I was waiting for that. I was like, someone's going to find these tapes and be doing their investigation about this investigation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. No, it's nothing like that.
Perfect.
So nothing happens for like a week, and then Sarah Jane shows back up at the video store while Jeremy's there. She grabs a few tapes. They talk for a minute, and then she goes back home. Jeremy reports back to Stephanie, and Stephanie knows that Sarah Jane has been weird ever since finding that farmhouse. And she suspects that, you know, she's like up to something. Stephanie asks which tape she took, and one of them is a Star Trek movie. The other is Primal Fear. They actually did list out all these movies, but I was listening to it on audiobook, and I did not take the time to write them all down. But we know about Primal Fear, and we know about one of the Star Trek movies. Stephanie tells him that she's going to go to like another video store in Ames, Iowa, to get those movies and see what's on them. Jeremy's like kind of being standoffish. He's not telling her much about Sarah Jane's side of things. She tries to like goad him into like becoming a more active participant in this investigation. He's kind of like trying to pull back a little bit, I think. Both of them know that there's not going to be anything on those tapes in Ames, right? Stephanie's just kind of flailing and trying to do something, right? She's just trying to do something. The tapes that are the only tapes that could possibly have anything on them, Sarah Jane already has, and they can't get them back without tipping their hand that they're like looking into her now, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next scene we get is Sarah Jane pulling back up to Lisa Sample's house again. She meets her at the door with the new tapes in hand, and they go inside. Let's take a little detour into Jeremy's dad's perspective. So we're going to shift.
If this was going to be an ad break, I was going to.
No, it's not actually.
I think Jeremy's dad would want us to buy a subscription.
Jeremy's dad.
He's tired
has
of
some
Taco
big
John.
Feelings about Factor meals. let's take a detour into Jeremy's dad's perspective. So just like Devil House did, this is going to jump from perspective from time to time. But what I love about it is it jumps into a perspective that's not the main character.
Mm-hmm.
It stays there until it's done, and then it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I get really confused when there's a whole lot of switching, like we had in the one about the meatballs into the well.
Story.
Yeah. So I really do appreciate that about his writing style. He'll jump into this perspective. He'll say everything there is to say from this perspective, and he's done with it. And we're back to the main thread. So we get this chapter about Jeremy's dad, and it's actually really sweet. He goes on a date in Des Moines the first time since his wife died. And on the drive home, even though the date went really well, all he can think about is like kind of the highlight reel of the time he and his wife had together. It's this like really moving passage. And I'm not going to go into it here because it's like an aside from the main story. But I was at the gym listening to it, and I was like, I'm not going to cry at the gym. I'm not going to cry at the gym. I'm not going to cry at the gym. And just like Devil House, like this book is peppered with like meaning all over. And this is just one of those like beautiful little asides. The next thing that we get is Sarah Jane leaving Lisa Sample's house first thing in the morning. So she's been there all night. We learn here from the first time that she seems to be like helping to make the tapes now. This wasn't the case before, but now she's helping. We don't know why. That's going to remain a mystery for a little bit. At the very least, she's like putting the tapes on the shelf of her own store with the full knowledge of what they are, right? Mm. So we still don't really know exactly what it is that she's doing, but she doesn't need to be there all night to do that either, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been several months now that have passed since we last saw her show back up at Lisa Sample's door after their first meeting. It's springtime now. It's not winter anymore. There haven't been any new developments. We get the impression that Sarah Jane has been spending a lot of time at Lisa Sample's house. Lisa tells Sarah Jane that it's time in this kind of like cryptic scene. And Sarah Jane says all of them. Lisa says, yes, that's fine. They won't all get rented out at once. They'll filter out over time, which is why they're doing old 70s movies, new releases, you know, popular mm-hmm. movies from the past, not so popular movies for the past, so that they're all not like hitting people's TVs at the same time and making like a whole scene. They're just happening a little bit at a time, right? Jeremy comes into the video store and he's opening up for the day. It's been a while since he's seen Sarah Jane for like any length of time. He's begun to think of himself as the manager of the place rather than her, which is never a good place to be, right? Mm-hmm. When you start to think that something that doesn't belong to you does belong to you, it's never a good place to be in, which is actually a pretty big theme of Devil House.
Mm-hmm.
On this like particular day, we're left to believe that this stack of videos that's in the return slot, like a larger than normal stack, are videos that Sarah Jane has come in early in the morning and dropped into the mail slot. And then left, right?
So that Jeremy is so like an absent fucking manager. Not only is she seeding these tapes, she just dropped them in the slot. Didn't even have the decency to shelve them.
Well, because again, like if she comes in and she starts shelving them, it's going to look weird because she's not checking them back in.
Yeah.
Right? She's she's going to be directly handling all the movies that have the things on them, especially if they just kind of show up, end up on the shelves, and you know, no one knows how they got there when it happened.
But lucky for us, our boy Jeremy likes to take those home.
He does. And this one, he actually doesn't seem to be aware that this larger than normal return box is anything unusual. Because why would it be? You know, sometimes they're bigger than others, you know? So it's a new crop of altered VHS tapes. And the first person into the store after it opens is Stephanie. It's also been a while since Jeremy has seen her. Their investigation kind of fizzled out. They make small talk for a minute, and she tells him that she's going to San Francisco soon. She's found a job there. There's this awkward moment of, like, acknowledgement, and this is like that Midwestern stoicism again, right? It's like they're both waiting for the other person to say something. Like, she's waiting for him to, like, give her a reason to stay, and he's wondering whether he should do that. And if he did, like, does he want it? You know, I don't know. Does she, you know, is that really what she wants? It's that just, I don't know. I love that, like, tension that happens there. That's just never fulfilled. Mm-hmm. Right. Anyway, Stephanie, leaves. Jeremy has, like, that feeling again, like he should be doing more with his life. So he goes and he finds some of those old job recommendations that his dad had been giving him. He picks up the phone and he makes some calls and, makes some calls, starts trying to set up interviews. So this is like, I don't know, this is just, this scene is so good, but it's also like so tragic, right? These two people that obviously like spent a lot of time together and like developed feelings, just like trying to bring it to a head and then just neither of them being able to actually close it, right? Mm-hmm. There's this thing about like small town dating that was always really, really weird when I was in high school anyway, over here, because it's a little town. Everyone knows everyone else. All the social groups are like all so like intertwined that you could like fuck up entire, you know, your entire social group, your entire night. If it went well, like, you know that your friends have crushes on this person. Mm-hmm. If it goes bad, you know that you've like embarrassed yourself and, you know that they're like telling their friends about it, and there's just no good outcomes, right? And this is just, I don't know, that put me like right back in high school, like watching that little scene or listening to that little scene. Anyway, Jeremy finds himself an interview in Des Moines, and after his interview, he goes to talk to Sarah Jane. The interview goes really well. He basically gets told that the job is his if he wants it. He's anxious because he doesn't know exactly what he's going to tell her, but this moment feels like a moment where he needed to act instead of thinking. So that was just a fucking cool line too. Mm-hmm. There's this like great line here. He says, talking about the moment that needs like action instead of thinking, that's the defining thing about moments, they pass. Just perfect line, right?
Mm-hmm.
He tries to get in touch with her, but he can't reach her. He goes to the store to find this like piece of paper. It has a cell phone number on it, something that was still pretty rare in the 90s. And it says to only contact Sarah in the event of an emergency. I don't think I got my first cell phone until 2001. So this would be 2 years before that. It's something that like adults had, but kids didn't really have yet. So I don't know. That's not here nor there. I just thought that was interesting. But while Jeremy's trying to call her, Sarah is out in Collins at Lisa Sample's house. Jeremy needs to talk to her. He's pretty sure that she's there, right? Mm-hmm. So all of this like started when she went out to Collins, when she came back to the store and told Jeremy what she found. He can't help but think that it's just like something in that house, something that Sarah Jane is doing is like all tied up in the tapes that like he's trying to like leave behind, you know? But he needs to talk to his boss. He feels like it needs to be like a conversation, not just like a note or a no call, no show. So Jeremy calls Stephanie and asks her for the address of the house that they know is the one in Collins. Then he points his car south toward Collins and he drives. On his way, he notices this blue Chevy on its side. It's Ezra's car, Ezra, his coworker, right? It's upside down. Ezra is lying on the side of the road. The pavement around the car is littered with VHS tapes. Okay, so next, we're going to see how this story ends. There's about 15 minutes of this episode that are going to be replaced by like a 1 or 2 second censor tone.
Yeah, those not 15 a 15 minutes
censor tone. Holy shit. That 15 minutes, the entire episode is going to be available on Patreon. If you want to hear the rest of the story, find us at patreon.com/edgingthepodcast or pick up Universal Harvester by John Darnielle. Sorry, everybody. Edging podcast was actually taken. So, we'll be back in just a moment with reactions for everybody after the censor tone. Are you ready, Brooke, Bridget, Kayla?
Let's so hear
ready.
It.
Okay.
Born ready.
Here we go.
That's so cold.
That's right. Holy shit. What the fuck is going on?
There
that's,
it
that's
is.
That's right over the corn. Corn. Mm-hmm. We've been in the it's corn this whole here. Time.
Ian, that's the most important part.
I hope I get the chance to say something like that. He's just a dramatic bitch. That's amazing.
Okay. And that is fucking Universal Harvester by John Darnielle. All right. So, Kayla, how are we feeling?
I'm not sure. I
That wasn't going where you thought it was going, was it?
No! And I'm like, oh, this is going to cut so well because people are going to miss the 15 minutes and they're going to come back to me being like, that ending came out of nowhere. Because in a lot of ways it did. I did think the story was going in a far different direction than it was going in. And it went in a completely different place. I feel like I want to read it because it sounds, the bits and pieces that you've read have been really, just like really good writing. But I don't know if I even feel like I understand it. You get into it with Jeremy, like people grieving people do things that they can't always explain or understand. And I think that is a part of this story in a way I had not anticipated.
I did not expect it to break my heart the way it did.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you're right. There's like, people do inexplicable things. And like, even as the book closes out, you're like, I don't know if I could ever get to a place where I would do that sort of thing in grief. Mm-hmm. But also like when you hear it described, you're like, fuck, I don't know. Maybe I would, I don't know. You know, like it's even if it's like not something that would end up happening to me or me doing, it would just fucking, I don't know, it just fucking breaks your heart.
Well, the part that's the saddest for me, I'm not sure if I can say without it being spoilery for the people that haven't heard the ending.
Yeah.
Does that?
Yeah. I think I know what part you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You had a pretty strong reaction when.
Oh, no, not even. I mean,
oh, that
part,
it?
There was,
yeah.
No, that part did, when I figured out where you were going, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing, you get a little bit of, like, there's a lot of conversation about family, but I think Lisa and the way she engaged with the people around her kind of became the thing that maybe caused her family trouble in the first place.
Mm, yeah. She does.
That's kind of.
She does come out. She does start to feel kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing I can't say. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The thing that we can't say because these seemingly random people get so engrossed in her story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good, right?
Yeah, and it kind of gives. I mean, even I want to finish sentences and I can't. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm getting a sort of cyclical nature from a lot of aspects in this story that's lovely and haunting.
Mm-hmm. Brooke, Bridget, how are you all feeling?
Well, definitely 10 ears of corn out of 10 ears
of corn. 10 ears of corn for me, too.
So much corn all around.
Yeah. So we got there?
Yeah.
Is John Darnielle like our favorite author now?
I was going to say I've read none of his books, and I have also a theory about him. So one, he might be my favorite author, so I need to read both of these books. But kind of like you just said, Ian, about this story where you have these characters elevating this idea of people just do unexplainable things. It's really hard to write a mystery story about people who do unexplainable things that's satisfying and compelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard him do it twice.
Yeah.
Through you telling us about his books. And like, that is such a beautiful skill to get to the end of this story. It's impossible to know where it's going because you can't put yourself in the character's shoes. That's a really different kind of way to engage with a story.
Did we get, in any course of this, any information about Sarah Jean's life?
Not really. No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think we learn she's a much more three-dimensional character in the book, obviously. Like, for the sake of our telling, she's a plot device. But in the book, she's fleshed out a whole lot more, and she doesn't feel like window dressing, you know?
I guess I'm going to have to read the book.
I guess so. Something that I love about this story is like how well it sums up small towns and like that just very like Midwestern culture, you know? It's like this thing that happened, and it happened for a reason. But it happened in this medium that was about to die, and no one knows it yet. So, VHS, right? So VHS tapes they're going to be gone within a couple of years, right? And this mystery is going to go away with them. No one's going to see it. You know, Lisa thinks that these are going to go on forever, and they're not.
That sucks so hard.
And Jeremy, you know, thinks that this is like a big deal, and this like video stores, things like that are just like staples in these towns, and they're not gonna be in a couple of years. Mm-hmm. This is a thing that happened. It happened for a reason, but it happened in a way that isn't gonna last, and that mystery is gonna disappear along with it. And it's like something that Sarah Jane, Stephanie, Jeremy, they would all get sucked into, and ultimately it wouldn't matter to the wider world. But it matters to them. And I'll close with this like quote about small towns like Nevada. It's not that nobody ever gets away. It's that you carry it with you. James and Abby, who like arrived, they look around this little town in Iowa where their parents have decided to buy a house. New buildings are going up in place of what was there before, and they wonder what changes might have happened before they arrived. Were those buildings that are being replaced with newer buildings replacing other buildings before them? The town that they see, the town that they see is what will always be that town to them. It could never have been anything different. And in the future, it can't ever be anything else. It just is what it is for the time that they experience it. But these are like real places where people spend real lives. And they do change. And they do evolve. And it's just like, I don't know, it's like one of those like every town along the highway kind of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. You think about like all those stories that are lost to time, like songs that were written and sung by people before they could be recorded, that we'll never know about, we'll never hear. I don't know. They're all lost to time, but like things happen and they happen to people. And they really mean something to those people. And then they're gone. And that's Edging. Hello, everybody. We're back. Ooh. All right. Ooh. Kayla, tell us again. Who are you? What are you doing here? And where can people find you?
Who am I? I actively soul searching after the reading of that book. My name's Kayla Temshev. I'm an actor and a writer. You can find me online anywhere at Kayla Temshev. It's just my name. Right now, check me out on Poe Evermore as Anna. Super, super psyched about that. Check me out on 13 in their spooky season special. And hopefully some more places that I can talk about and we can all talk about soon.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's the show. I think that's the show. We finished the show.
And we'll see you all next time. And we love you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a book to go find.
Yeah. All right.